Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. On behalf of everyone at America This Week, we thank you for listening to the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM for the last 10 years. You're listening to America This Week with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. I am Kerry Weber, along with Father Matt Malone, and we are talking with Father Sam Sawyer, our friend and colleague, about fake news and technology, social media. If you would like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. That's 1-888-322-8465. And in fact, we have a caller right now, so we're going to go straight to him. Nathan from Jacksonville, Florida. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hello. Do you have a question or comment for us?
I heard about how people are taking news. I don't think that if you have to agree with a news article or with a quote-unquote news report that you see on TV or on social media or on the internet or anything, that's, if you have to agree with it, it's not news. It's an opinion piece that you're watching. And I think far too often people are, or news organizations are throwing out opinion pieces and calling them the news. And whenever I get to the opinion section of a newspaper, I tend to throw it away.
Yeah.
I don't care what their opinion is. I just want the news on a piece. What happened?
Sure. Well, Nathan, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. What do we think about that?
Well, I think, you know, the line comes to mind, you know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts.
Right.
And so part of the issue here, you know, we're certainly at America Magazine and at America Media, we're in the opinion and analysis business. So I hope that people don't throw away something as soon as it stops being straight news and turns into analysis and opinion. But the question is, what's that analysis, what's that insight based on? Is it based on, number one, accurate facts? And number two, is it based on facts in full context?
Right.
Right. Because when I said at the beginning of the show that sometimes this fake news term becomes a catch-all, you know, the worst version of this problem is when there's a piece that just makes up the facts entirely. So like we saw with this, you know, the situation in Washington with the attack at this pizza shop that was based on a conspiracy theory that has no real basis in fact. But there's also sort of a softer version of this, and whether or not this properly falls under the term fake news is up for debate, but it's still a problem, where somebody takes one fact or something that is close to a fact or a fact under a certain interpretation, but blows it way out of proportion to everything else and doesn't provide any contextualizing information, doesn't balance it with the other things that are also true about this candidate or about this policy. You know, so I we've seen a lot of this in the coverage of the refugee and migration stories, right? Where somebody might focus on the, you know, what's the worst possible thing that can happen? Well, is that factually possible? Sure. Is that an accurate sense of all the facts that matter here? Not at all.
Right.
And in fact, in some ways, it's an argument to read more widely, to not throw away the opinion section, to whether it's news or not, whether you're looking for the news or not, to kind of keep going, because all reading very widely will allow you to interpret that news, I think, whether it's fake or real, more accurately, and then also to be better at discerning whether the opinions that are offered are, in fact, based in those facts or in sort of sketchy facts.
Right.
It also means that in addition to our needing, a greater media literacy and education in how to consume media and news, people also need to be schooled in the basic canons of formal and informal logic, right? Which would be extremely helpful. But I wonder whether there's
a catchy pitch.
Right, exactly, right.
The
right.
New civics.
That just went very Jesuitical very quickly. Is this now part also of a larger cultural trend? By which I mean that the very notion of objective truth is more suspect now, culturally and socially, than it was, say, 50 years ago.
Right.
And, you know, I talk to professors at the Jesuit colleges and universities who say one of the problems that I continually run into with my students in their papers is that because they think they feel something, it is therefore true and a fact, right? Mm-hmm. I feel this way about X, therefore X is either good or bad.
Right.
Right.
You know, when I spent 2 years during my Jesuit formation teaching philosophy at one of our universities, and the first assignment I would give in the introductory philosophy class there is to write a paper about a time when you thought you believed one thing and were convinced differently by an argument. Because I thought that was precisely where we needed to start in order to do philosophy, but also in order just to have a real conversation that wasn't simply a bunch of us, you know, trading our own assertions about things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wonder if was it hard for students to come up with that? I mean, was there anyone who was like, that never happened to me? I've always been correct.
No, but on the first try, I would often get, some of the papers would come back and, you know, be something like, well, I thought I liked apple pie and didn't like cherry pie, but then I was convinced differently, and right. I'd send the paper back and underlined by argument.
I used to teach philosophy also when I was in theology, and I would always try to sort of tease out whether they would concede that there were some things that were always and everywhere wrong.
Right.
Right. That there are such things as moral absolutes. And I would get into these most absurd examples. Like, what if we were shooting children out of cannons at the halftime show at the Super Bowl? Would that be, like, would that always be wrong? And, but there's something in the culture that resists that kind of, that notion of an absolute, that notion of there being an objective truth. And, you know, while we can certainly overreact to that as a church, we also have to be mindful of it and the ways in which it plays out in our culture. We have Don on the line from Michigan. Don, how are you? Welcome to the conversation.
Doing great, and thank you for having this conversation. Like I told the screener, I think today there's such a rush to get it out there, scoop, that the bias right and left, there's no way to tell where the truth lies because supposedly they don't take the time necessarily to check things before they put them out there because of the rush to get it. One of the things that I was struck by was during the campaign, Mr. Trump, President-elect Trump, had been recorded and on the news or on videotape saying a particular thing, and a week later would stand in front of a group of people and say, no, I never said that. I didn't do that. No, it wasn't me. No, I never did. And if you bought into his side of the coin, that's all they ever saw. Well, if Donald says that's the evil media that concocted this other story that showed that what he said was that he was actually lying to us.
Right.
So,
right. Well, thank you, Don. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Also, one of the things we're up against there is, you know, in a world where the president-elect is willing to communicate with the public primarily in Twitter, Twitter is always going to be faster than a full news story, and 140 characters is almost always going to be catchier than a news story or a piece of analysis that has to start off by almost always saying, actually, it's a little more complicated than that, right? And one of the problems we have is that social media, because it's designed to, from a business perspective, to commoditize our attention, to sell advertising to us, is always going to have a sort of automatic lean towards what is catchiest, towards what is most satisfying, whether it's satisfying because we agree with it or satisfying because it outrages us somehow. We're going to lean there. And if the truth is, if what reality is that oftentimes we're saying, actually, it's a little more complicated than that. Well, how often do we really want to hear, that's a little more complicated, you need to think harder about this, and some of column A, some of column B? That's never going to be as catchy as the stuff we're amplifying on social media.
You would think that in a world in which there is so much captured on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, you know, like Don, our caller, said, you know, videos on YouTube or wherever, that it would lend itself on some level toward greater honesty and attention to the truth because it's so, like, provable, right? So you can show a video. You can say, I didn't say that. And then you can show a video of somebody saying that. Right. You would think, theoretically at least, that we would all be sort of leaning toward greater honesty and transparency in our use of social media because we can so easily be held accountable for what we've said and done.
You would think so.
But somehow.
But you can also so easily deny it. And if I think what it gets us to is we have to get to a level where we're asking a question other than what is currently the loudest, what is being most amplified, because what is being most amplified can be dominated by the way that social media and these tech companies sort of engineer our attention. It can be amplified by our own bad tendencies. It can be amplified by whatever we simply have the most appetite for. How do we get to the level beneath that? I think the professional media, professional journalists are still working out how to deal with fact-checking a president-elect who communicates by Twitter and seems oftentimes on Twitter to be willing to make assertions that are either provably false or in contradiction to something he said in the past, or simply, sometimes we'll frequently see from President-elect Trump on Twitter things like, lots of people are saying, like, well, who are they and where are they saying it? You know, these things are hard to fact check in that way.
Right. And when it does, it is also commands resources, right, that mainstream media organizations probably would have used to cover some of the actual bigger stories in the world or something more substantial rather than reacting to what someone has put out on Twitter. Right. And some people have theorized that it's, a strategy to redirect the media.
But I think there's also a question for us about how we deal with this, how we shepherd our own attention in this. When we see something to which we respond either very positively or very negatively, do we then invest a little bit of effort to find the context? Do we, when we see our friends sharing something that seems to gloss very quickly over the facts, do we make the effort to reach out and correct them, to say, hey, you're making this conversation more superficial than it should be.
Are we a part of the solution or a part of the problem? Ed from Georgia, you're on with America This Week. Welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. I wanted to throw in my two cents worth. I'm a statistician, and in teaching statistics, I run across my students that will accept any numbers that are given just because they're on the Internet. And this is something that we struggle with in mathematics and in statistics, along with our friends in journalism and philosophy. And I wanted to say that a lot of times I'll tell my students to don't trust anything, trust no one until you can verify it. And I know this rather difficult thing for comments and opinions. But with numbers, we run across the same problems.
Okay. Well, all right, Ed, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, there's this certainly a problem that we're intimately familiar with at America, running a website and running multiple different social media accounts. How do you build a community of discourse, a community of conversation that actually values coming to the truth rather than just proving their own points?
Right.
I think one of the ways that I've seen that's powerful, I know it's powerful when we have the occasion to do it, when someone, posts something in the comments and we come back and say, we were wrong about that, or you're right, we missed that fact, or we didn't give the full context for that. Here, let us go back and fix that. Or in a conversation that's happening on social media, on the rare occasion where you can actually get two people who say, I didn't think about it that way, or you're right, I was oversimplifying that point, and really it is more complicated than that. When we can actually get to the point of saying, I was wrong about that, I think that does more that, it's almost like it's a form of public confession in a way, and not at all to trivialize the sacrament, but there's power in that. There's power in that public act of repentance and openness and vulnerability where you say, actually, the truth has priority over how I feel about this. The truth has priority over what I wish to be true in this case. And also communicating that in charity to another human being mm-hmm. has priority over how I wish to feel about this. That's tremendously powerful, and we simply don't see enough of it in the modern, in the contemporary communications world.
Yeah, it's important. And of course, the first step toward realizing that different way of proceeding is to recognize that our discourse has to be about encounter rather than confrontation.
Right.
And that we if it's so long as it is mortal combat, then the stakes will be too high for anybody to make themselves that vulnerable. But yet that vulnerability, that confession, as it were, as you put it, is so necessary if we're going to create a space in which something different can really happen. Sam Sawyer, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And, of course, you can follow Sam and his work at our website, americamagazine.org. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Kaya Oakes, talking about her recent article on Black Catholics' Witness to a Changing Community in Oakland, California. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.